What besides a human foot am I looking at?
The true owner of two missing feet found in the Chilkoot River, still a mystery after years of uncertainty. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bick.
Tara will not be able to host the news today, but don't worry, you'll get your stories. I just hope you like ghost stories.
We used to have a madam / tour guide that worked at the Red Onion who did not believe in ghosts, yet she had to tell these ghost stories on her tours. And her name was Lucy Longtime. Lucy was giving her tour, and the tour finishes up in the brothel, and she was in what we call the madam's room, which is the place where Lydia's story gets told. And as she was talking about Lydia, there's in one of the other rooms that we call the crib room, there is actually a travel-sized bed frame on the wall that was used by the ladies who worked there. And the bed frame went up 90 degrees, smacked against the wall 3 times, and then just kind of rattled there for a minute. And Lucy thought this was really funny, that the bartenders or some of the other staff were probably finally playing a joke on her, because she was kind of a prankster. So she went over there to see if there was any strings or wires or anything attached. Turns out there was nothing. So she's like, okay, folks, thank you very much. Tour's over. And she left before everybody else did. And then later on that day, at the end of the shift, two other ladies were in the change room. And on the shelf at that time is where we kept the Red Onion souvenir garters that you got when you came on a brothel tour. And they're on these pieces of cardboard that are about as long as your arm, and they're stacked on a shelf. And they were in there changing, and the garters on the cardboard sleeves came flying off the shelf at them. And there's no way that it could have done that by itself. And when she is seen, she is dressed very respectably. She's a tiny, a very petite woman, and she's quite feisty, to say the least. From what we gather, she committed suicide because she contracted syphilis, and back then, you know, that was pretty much a death sentence. So rather than go through the whole process of suffering with illness, she hung herself. The only reason we know this is because people have actually seen her hanging in one of the rooms, and it's always the same spot. So that's where we assume that she did the deed.
The stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell.
November 15th, 1922, a telegram came to Haines stating, Shoop and Garster will be in Haines tomorrow. Do not bury body until they arrive. 3 days later, another telegram arrived stating, if doctor will not perform autopsy, bury body, but before doing so, get doctor to get location of bullet wounds and determine cause of death. Stop. Impossible for Shoop to get there now. Presumably, Southeast Alaska's notorious autumn weather was what was keeping the steamship from running and keeping Shoop away. But the body that was referred to is that of Robert F. Ferry. And Bob Ferry was the manager of the Harbor Bar in the early 1920s when he met a woman who's only known as Mrs. Bryson. So Mrs. Bryson had been married 3 times before, and each of her marriages had apparently made her miserable, according to her childhood sweetheart, whose name was Ernest Bryson, who became her third husband. The Brysons came to Haines for a teamster job that apparently fell through, but Mrs. Bryson stayed in Haines to work in a coffee shop while Mr. Bryson picked up odd jobs all throughout Southeast. And according to witnesses, she thought the world of her husband Ernest until she met Bob Ferry. And Ernest soon received a letter from his wife stating her intention to leave him, and he came back to Haines as quickly as he could and apparently managed to talk her into staying with him and moving down to Hyder, where he was at the time. But she didn't arrive on the steamship that he had expected to find her on, so Bryson returned to Haines. And that night, Bob Ferry went to the house probably to plead with his beloved not to leave with her husband. And Bryson went to the house to bring his wife some things he'd picked out for her, but didn't get an answer when he knocked on the door. So he saw a dim light in the house and went around to look in the window and saw Ferry in the living room looking quite agitated and pleading with Mrs. Bryson. He stealthily entered the residence through a bedroom window, picked up a gun, and shot Ferry once in the chest. Ferry ran for the kitchen, where Bryson shot him again in the hip, and Ferry died. Then Bryson walked calmly with his wife to the house of the U.S. Deputy Marshal to turn himself in. Even though he was calm, his wife certainly was not, and she was placed back in the house under guard after screaming at various women in Haines and swearing that none of this would have happened if they hadn't told on her. A coroner's inquest found Bryson to be generally a mild-mannered and pleasant man, and he was finally brought to trial in Juneau, where he was acquitted, and he and his wife disappeared forever from Haines' history. But Bob Ferry stayed in town, haunting the town through the house that was called the Ferry House until it was torn down this past summer.
My name is Carl Gerke, and I'm the park historian at Fondant Gold Rush National Historical Park. This concerns a couple of my colleagues, archaeologists, who were working up at Sheep Camp on the Chilkoot Trail back in 1979. There actually were three of them doing an archaeological survey at the time for the Park Service. And one morning, while having coffee and their breakfast, they both started to remark that the night before, they had heard music, piano music, old-time, ragtime music at Sheep Camp. And, of course, there's no piano there. Not now, anyway. So maybe there's some ghost up there at Sheep Camp, or maybe several ghosts, still playing that old ragtime tune in the saloon at Sheep Camp.
Well, some people ask me about the ghost that's in my house. If you walk by the house there at number 4 Fort Seward Drive, you see the ghost peering out of the attic window. And that's sort of in commemoration of this ghost that we found when we first moved in. Our little boy, who was maybe 6 or so, he was running up the stairs, and his room was sort of towards the back of the long hallway there, and he saw this yellow man walk right through the back door of the upstairs that kind of leads to the attic, and he just walked right through it. And so he came back down to tell us about it, and so we then dubbed the ghost the Yellow Man. I would hear rock and roll happenings over my head at night in the bedroom. It was noises that I couldn't explain. There were no wires outside my window. It didn't necessarily have to be a windy day or anything when things were going on up there in the attic. My daughters also had encounters with the Yellow Man. But, you know, now that the children have grown and left, the ghost doesn't seem to have as much activity. I don't know if he decided to move on or what. We believe that his name is emblazoned in the rafters of the attic, because there's burnt into the attic rafter, J. O. Rockefeller. You start to freeze,
and so it looks you right between the eyes. When I was a younger man and I just hit town here in Haines, I realized that in the fall time, just about this time of year, the water was low enough on the Chilkoot River to where I could go up there and collect fishing lures. Up at the very top, there was lots of salmon carcasses and things floating around, lots of heads and tails and backbones and, you know, pieces, parts. And I saw one incredibly large salmon head, and I got my face right down on the waters. And I looked at this thing, this white thing, amongst all these other white things, and I said to myself, okay, what besides a human foot am I looking at? And believe me, I wanted to come up with an answer to that question. And when I didn't, I gaffed the thing, clearly a human foot, got it up to the bank, went into town to the police station and reported having found a foot. And they said, oh, good, we've lost somebody. And she said, where'd you find it? I said, in the Chilkoot. She said, oh, no, we lost him in the Chilkat. I said, well, I'm sorry, I found the foot in the Chilkoot. She said, that's not possible. I said, I'm telling you, I just found a human foot in the Chilkoot River. Said, that's not in our jurisdiction. So she called up Otis, who was the state trooper at the time, and out we went. And I went to where I thought I'd thrown it, and I couldn't find it. And I'm looking, and I'm looking, and Paul Wheeler was up there fishing by the time we got back up there. And I told him what I was looking for, and I started looking. And I'm looking, and I'm looking, and I got almost to the very edge where the water went around a corner and dropped off deep. And there it was. And I gaffed it. And just as I did so, I hear Paul yell way up the river, "Found it! Here it is!" A right and a left. Otis wasn't pleased, but I talked to Doc Feldman about, you know, could I mistake human feet for bear feet, and I went up to Fred Shields' house, and I looked at his anatomy chart that showed the bone structure of the foot, and I went in the police station and was like, "Have you got a forensic guy to check that out?" And they said, "No, we had a local guy look at them. He said they're bear feet." I said, "Okay, I want them back." I said, "No, we threw them out. Case closed." Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween from KHNS News. For more creepy tales about your neighborhood, go to the listen page at khns.org.
Ha ha ha!